Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Angela Bishop, and for the past 30 years, I've been lucky enough to interview some of the funniest, loveliest, and zaniest celebrities around. There have been some cracker interviews, but what you see on TV is usually just a fraction of what's actually recorded. Find out what went off before the cameras went on. This is Starstruck with me, Ange Bishop. This time, we've put together a menu of tasty little morsels, bite-sized chunks, if you like, of interviews with some of Hollywood's biggest stars. First up, Mad Max himself, Mel Gibson. I caught up with him at his old acting school, NIDA, or to give it its full name, the National Institute of Dramatic Art in Sydney, where the new graduate school was opening. I didn't realise it had been 40 years since he went there.
What does it feel like for you to be back here at NIDA after 40-odd years?
Well, that's okay, because it's like it seems like a wholly different place, and that's because it is. Mm. Because I used to be somewhere else. The institution was located somewhere else. Yeah, it's nice. I mean, 40 years, oh, my God, you know, it's a long time. Not for some people. Some people, it's just a walk in the desert, but, you know, it's a long time.
Good memories. Your year, 1977, was a particularly bumper crop of graduates.
Was it? Mm. I don't know. Bumper?
Steve?
Oh, Steve, yes, of course. Judy.
Judy?
Yeah, there was some
Steve
good...
Bisley, Judy Davis, I should give their full name we know about whom we speak.
Of course, yeah, it was a great year. But the year after wasn't bad either, and the year after that was even better, I think. I don't know who was in those years.
Did you have, like, a special teacher or a special mentor or someone here at NIDA that really inspired you?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yes, there were people, and good ones. And sometimes you have to say, well, were they mentors or tormentors? And it was like... you know, there was this old teacher in movement who was, you know, she was pretty tough. And then there was someone in voice who was amazing. Her name was Doreen Hogan. She was a pillar of this place. And we had, you know, an acting guy called George Whaley who was phenomenal, and a movement guy called Keith Bain. And, you know, it was there were some very good, very experienced, very knowledgeable mentors here. And we took a lot from them, and they fed us. And we were able to take those things that we learned from them into the world, you know, so it was nice.
Was it hard?
I enjoyed it. It was hard sometimes. I mean, there was like long hours. You were living on like $15 a week, you know, where you go home and there'd be a cockroach smoking a cigarette on your bed, you know. And it was like that kind of thing, you know, sleeping on the floor. No locks on the building, you know, you'd wake up and there'd be some toothless old gummer crawling in with you. You'd be like, you know, pretty funny. But, you know, but I enjoyed the heck out of it. I mean, you're young, too, so, you know, you got so much boundless energy. I mean, 19 years old, for Pete's sake. I mean.
You came from this huge family of brothers, okay?
Yeah.
All you boys. What was their reaction when you said, I'm going to be an actor, I'm going to go and study acting?
Well, I didn't know I was going to do that either. It was just something that I tried, amongst other things, and I got accepted. It was a fairly hard thing to get accepted. In those days, I think there were a lot of people trying to look for these very few positions. So I got, come here. So I thought, oh, I'll take that, because it seemed a rarity. What did they think? I thought it was all right.
Yeah?
I didn't get a rough time from them.
No ribbing at all?
No, nothing, no.
Gee, that's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
We'd finished all that. We were in our late teens. We'd already punched each other and made up and hugged each, you know, it was... All the nonsense is over by then. You know.
So your first big role when you got out of NIDA was Mad Max? Was that the first
one? Straight away. I mean, the day after. I mean, it was like off to Melbourne and, you know, put on the vinyl suit.
You know. How did you get it?
I think I just walked in. Oh, my God, I drove Steve, actually.
Steve Bisley.
Yes. And I waited for him while he did his audition. And I was sitting in the waiting room, and I'd had a bit of a stoush. at a local pub a couple of nights before, and I came out the worst for it. So, you know, my head didn't, I was all like black eyes, and my nose was over here, and, you know, I didn't look too hot. And these girls were in there going, "What happened to you?" So I was making up all sorts of stories. And I was talking to them for a while. I got them laughing. They said, "Come back when you heal up, you know, and we'll run you through the mill." I said, "Okay." So I drove him home. Then I came back like 3 weeks later, and they didn't recognize me. So I pointed to the Polaroids they'd taken up on the, and they said, "Oh, it's you." So they put me in there. I told George a joke, and he gave me the gig like that. So it was good.
Wow. Yeah. So was that experience, did that convince you that it was movies that you wanted to do, or?
Well, no.
Was that your ticket to Hollywood? Did it all happen quickly?
Well, I guess. I mean, I hadn't actually thought about film, you know? It was like we were trained in stagecraft. Yeah. And of course, that's what I did after that, you know?
Yeah, I saw you at with the late, great Warren Mitchell, who just passed
away.
Oh,
yeah, he just passed away. Sorry to hear that.
I saw you in Death of a Salesman.
It was over 30 years ago.
Thanks.
I think it was the last time I was on stage.
I think I was a very little girl.
You were a child, a mere child.
Yeah, a mere child, but it was so good.
Yeah, Warren was amazing.
And you were a great Biff.
Oh, well, you know, I don't even remember. It's amazing the stuff I don't remember. But, yeah, where were we?
Did Hollywood sort of come quickly after that? Was it just like they
Pretty
just...
much. I think it was because that was literally the last time I was on stage was that show.
Yeah. So you did Mad Max and then... If you like it.
And then several other things.
Yeah.
You know, just one thing sort of, they felt like dominoes after that. You know?
Yeah.
It's good.
Do you think that it's important for actors and those people who want to act as a career to study? Do you think that that's a vital part of it?
Absolutely. I think you need to. I mean, everyone's born with an innate talent for one thing or another, some people in the performing arts. And I think you need to have a place to hone that. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to give you any extra, you know, juice in your battery, but, you know, you're born with what you're born with, but I think you can be taught how to use it better, more economically, and I think study is a very important part of how to use the gift you've been given.
So that's everything from the vocal exercises to knowing how to do Shakespeare.
Yeah,
all
absolutely.
Of these things are crucial?
Yeah, of course, because, you know, you don't just naturally know how to do that stuff. Somebody who knows has to impart some kind of knowledge and help you through it. And you may have an aptitude that way, but you need to spend time bringing that out. And those are skills, you know.
But most people in the business, in Hollywood, for instance, are they trained?
I don't know. I think
a lot
of them are. Some of them are amazingly well trained, you know, but I'm sure. But I never really, you don't ask people. I know when they're good and when they're not.
Mm. Mm. Did you study directing at all as part of your course when you were here?
Or no, I did not.
Purely
no.
acting?
No.
And
nothing.
So if the graduate school was open back then, would that have been something you would have looked into?
Well, perhaps, except for I didn't really need it because I was in a situation where I was in the middle of the hub of things and I could actually stand there and watch and learn. Watching masters at work and asking a bunch of questions, but not everybody gets that opportunity.
No.
So, of course, the postgraduate school is an amazing thing to be able to fool around with cameras and lenses and storytelling and, you know, studying Eisenstein, you know, whatever he had to tell us about filmmaking. And he had a lot to tell us about filmmaking early on. So.
You're here in Australia at the moment directing Hacksaw Ridge. What's it feel like to be doing that here?
It's great, you know. Interesting. I was just thinking this morning that, first I was sitting there sort of taking in the sort of viscera of the harbor, thinking what a great place this is and how lucky it is. And I thought it's interesting now that this has become a place where one can make a film with a world theme that doesn't necessarily even belong here. You can take a story from somewhere else and bring it here to make it, so it's a kind of a preferred destination for these things, which tells me that the industry is really mature and that it has all the facilities, all the talent, all the everything it needs to flourish to be able to tell a universal story.
Mm-hmm. How is filming going on it? What's it been like?
It's good, you know. It's like, hey, filming always has its problems. You got to jump through the hoops and hop over the hurdles and try and do it on time and under budget, which is like a whole other skill set that I don't really possess a talent for. But we're getting there. We're getting there. And at the end of the day, you know, maybe I've got it, maybe I don't.
What are we going to see? What's it about?
Hopefully, I think the heart of the story is what is the most important part of it. I mean, there's a lot there. You know, there's a lot of boom and bang, you know, because there's a battle in Okinawa, which in the Pacific was the highest loss of life in the South Pacific, but in the Second World War. But the central story is about a man who's a conscientious objector and who goes to war and doesn't bear a weapon, but gets in the midst of every horror and save lives rather than takes them. And he won a Congressional Medal of Honor. I mean, there's very conscientious objector who just more guts than anything. Just when everybody else wouldn't go someplace, he went there. You know, it was pretty amazing.
You've assembled an incredible cast, Vince Vaughn, Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, great cast. And all the boys here, Sam, you know, Worthington. Yeah, all the Riot Corps.
And a couple of Gibson Juniors, am
I right? Oh, yeah, a couple. No, well, there's just one in the acting, but there's another guy in the cameras.
Oh, great. So they're following you into the biz?
Well, they have their own sort of thing that they love doing. So I haven't encouraged or discouraged. I've just merely, you know, been there to help out if they need anything and see what they do.
This graduate school that we're opening today, what do you think is going to be the best thing about it? What do you think it's going to offer our industry and those wanting to go into it?
I think it's going to increase productivity of just, and I think that the appetite for artistic endeavor will get bigger. Because I think people already versed in the skills and what to do will sort of delve deeper in and realize that there should be no limit on what they can do, because this place is capable and it's as good or better than anywhere in the world, you know. And I think that needs to be realized. And a graduate, postgraduate school like this will just up the ante and just like make people reach higher, I'm hoping. You know?
It's still a tough business in which to make it.
Sure.
As someone who has, what's the secret?
Ah, geez, I don't know. I think just try and be truthful, you know. A lot of people get by on not being truthful, so maybe that's not the best advice, but geez, I mean, try it. You know, I faked it.
There's only one word that can describe this next star, and that is unstoppable. In 2009, the incredible Liza Minnelli brought her magic back to Australia after a 20-year gap. And we had a chat backstage at the Sydney Opera House, where I went home with what is definitely an unusual piece of memorabilia. Because she's the star she is, she was having a cigarette where probably most people wouldn't be allowed and stubbing it out in a glass of water. Just as we were packing up after finishing the interview, it occurred to me that the two cigarette butts she'd left behind in that glass of water held some of the most valuable showbiz DNA in the business. So I swiped them. Yes, I have Liza Minnelli's DNA very carefully preserved in case we need it. Liza, we are so excited to have you back, and we're here in the Sydney Opera House. You haven't performed here before, have you?
No, I'm so excited, I can't tell you. I'm really excited, because I've seen it being built.
I know.
Over the years, you know, I really have. That's so beautiful.
Of course,
it's purple.
It is purple. It's your color. It goes with everything you've got on. We have
well,
it designed.
Well, I did this on purpose.
The first time you came to Australia was with Peter. Was that right? With Peter Allen?
Yes.
Good memories?
Oh, wonderful memories. And I came again with him, you know. And then we came back several times just to visit, not to work. So it was great.
So every time you take to the stage here, which, may I say, is not often enough, is there a little bit of Peter in your heart when you perform? A little bit of Aussie Pete?
Of course there is. And I think that there's a little bit of everybody else that I've ever had the privilege to know and the privilege to work with. And definitely, Peter was great.
He's a tremendous performer. You were asked a few moments ago in the press conference about the wonderful Sally Bowles, whether she was a shadow for you or a friend, and you said she's definitely been a friend.
Oh, sure.
The song Cabaret, you say that you act through your songs. What does that mean to you, singing it now?
Well, I have to sing it every time like I've never sung it before. It has to be completely different. And to do that, I have to go back to the story. As with every song, you know. With each song, I know what color hair the woman has, what's her view outside of her window, you know, what What kind of flowers does she like? Where does she live? What's she looking at, you know? What kind of decals are on the refrigerator?
Wow.
All that stuff, you know, it's detailed.
So you're going to be meeting and mentoring our Australian Idol contestants this week.
Yes,
I am. Are these the sort of things you're going to pass on to them about how to really sell us on?
That's not my job. My job is to...
I think I'd like to hear it, just quietly.
I don't quite know what my job is, but I'll find out when I get there, I think.
What do you think of a reality show as a way of becoming a famous singer? Do you, for instance, if you were a contestant back when you were starting out, do you think it would have worked for you?
Oh, I have no idea.
That was too
long ago. You know, and also, I'm not sure how real reality shows are anymore, you know.
You know too much.
Well, yeah, I do. You know, they kind of tell you what to do, and you know, it's not terribly real.
Now, I love the fact that you've done Law and Order, and I love the fact that you've just done Sex and the City. Can you quickly tell me what you did in that?
Well, I sing in that.
Wow.
I do a number at the very beginning of the movie. And it's a great number. Ron Lewis did it, who is my director and my choreographer since 1970.
Wow.
I think that's my biggest talent, has always been to recognize people that are more talented than I am.
Oh.
And try and learn from them. And say, well, how do you do that? How, you know? But it was fun doing that. And
you married the gay guys, is that right? You're the marriage celebrant?
Yes, I married these two guys. And then they asked me, you know, if I want to... It's a surprise, you'll see.
Look, I love it. It's been so lovely catching up with you. We only come once every two decades. So
I've
got to grab the chance.
I'll be back more often, trust me.
Oh, we love to see you. Thank you so much, Liza.
Thank you.
Next up is a comedy genius, one of the brains behind the Blues Brothers and Ghostbusters. But did you know that the inspiration for Ghostbusters came from his real-life fascination with the paranormal? Or that he was once engaged to Carrie Fisher.
Well, Dan Aykroyd, welcome to Australia. It does seem you've left it till sort of quite late in the proceedings to pay us a visit. Any particular reason why?
The proceedings of my life, do you mean to the point where I'm in 61 years old? Yes, I know. I have loved this country ever since I watched The Flying Doctor as a kid going home from school. You know, at 4 o'clock there in Hull, Quebec in those cold winter nights. And I've always wanted to come here. But I've been doing, you know, just kind of busy doing things like raising a family and making movies and making vodka and all that, but and music. So I haven't really had a time to come here till now, but I really am enjoying it. This is a spectacular international city.
Do you sleep?
I'm not very well. I kind of sleep in spurts, you know, little wolf naps. I don't think I've slept 9 hours for the last 20 years. I go 45 minutes and then get up and do 20 and 35, you know, but I do get to the REM delta state, because when you're dreaming, you're in the REM delta state, and I do dream.
And that's where your ideas come from?
Sometimes, sure. I solve a lot of writing problems dreaming. You know, if you come to a block and you can't solve it, I go to sleep on it and usually wake up in the morning and have a view of it that helps me get through the project.
Have you ever had to pay for a pair of Ray-Bans since the Blues Brothers?
Oh, I buy them all. No, really? they sent me nothing.
You are kidding.
No, I bought them all. They're prescriptions, so.
Yeah, but still the frames, they could sling you a couple of pairs.
Yeah, well.
Ghostbusters, is it coming again?
Oh, yeah, we'll get that together.
And will Bill Murray do it, or has he said no?
He doesn't want to do it.
No.
But if he walks in the door at the last minute, we'll make a hole for him.
And he's the sort of person who might do that, isn't he?
Yeah, I'd love to see him come, even at the last minute, we'll figure it out. But, you know, he's done the part twice, and I can see how he'd want to move on in life. Look, Billy and I are friends first, colleagues second, and we have a friendship that no one can touch, that's just ours alone. And that's what I want to salvage out of all of this, is that friendship, and I know we will be able to.
You've achieved so much. What is there yet for you to achieve? What's on your bucket list?
Retirement.
Really?
Oh.
You don't sound like the sort of person who could retire.
I'm not one of these people that, you know, at 85 wants to be working. I fully am lazy, want to get out, want to ride my Harley, spend time with my family, and basically just do nothing. I really, really do want to do nothing.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
G'day, Sandra Sully here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast. If you're looking for more to listen to, head over to Short Black with me next. I talk to all kinds of amazing women who are making a difference. Good women, great chat.
Richard Chamberlain is one of Tinseltown's most versatile actors. From Dr. Kildare and Shogun to The Thornbirds and the American TV series Brothers and Sisters, he has had an amazing career spanning more than 60 years. But for much of that time, he was holding on to a secret that one day he decided he could no longer keep. So many things to ask you, but the thing I need to start with is, do you have a picture in the attic? You look extraordinary. You look fantastic.
I do look reasonably good for 81. I'm 81 now. I know that, but I certainly don't look like I used to.
Oh, you look amazing.
Thank you.
I think, like Dorian Gray, there's a picture up in the attic somewhere.
It's so hideous. No, I don't dare look at it anymore.
Do you look after yourself? Do you know?
Yes,
is it,
I do.
Is it an accident that you're looking so fabulous?
No, it's not an accident. I'm addicted to exercise, for instance. I always have been. I like to get enough sleep. I like what I do. I like my job. Otherwise, I think it's genes or something, but because I haven't done anything. Nobody believes that, but I haven't done anything, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, in the Hollywood sense. Yes, no, I believe you. Of course I believe you. Any man who's been in something as important to Australians as the Thornbirds could not possibly have done anything. What are your memories of the Thornbirds?
Oh, gosh. It was an amazing job. I mean, the cast alone, working with people like Barbara Stanwyck and all those, oh, fabulous cast. And it was a wonderful story. It's basically a first-rate soap opera, really. But it's a wonderful story. One thing that surprised me about it was that it's so full of tragedy, that story. Mm. And people almost never talk about that when they come up and they say, oh, you and Maggie, you were so, you know, and they think it was all a big love story, but it was really quite tragic. And it surprised me that, in a funny way, people didn't view it that way.
They it's not it their memory.
Just this one, yeah, the memory is this lovely love story, you know, forbidden love, really.
And you went back and revisited it, and that was your last visit to Australia, was it? When you...
Yes, yes, yes. They persuaded me with a very... with a lot of money to do this mid-call, which I didn't really want to do, and Rachel didn't want to do it. And so we had a new Maggie and a new everybody. And the Maggie we had was beautiful and a wonderful actress, but... We had no chemistry whatsoever. It was strange because Rachel and I got on so well, and it was so great working with her.
You called it a midquel. That's not a term I've ever heard before.
Well, it's because they couldn't do a sequel because I was dead by that time, and they didn't have anything to do before the whole story started. So they invented a story that happened in the mid section of that story. Called a midquel.
I am so surprised Hollywood hasn't grasped onto that and we haven't had midquels of Superman and Batman and everything else. It'll happen. You spoke of Rachel Ward, of course, who has called Australia home for all this time, married to Brian Brown and three very Aussie kids.
Well, they fell in love, you know, on when we were doing the Thornbirds. And I didn't like Brian at that time because we were such enemies in the film.
Yeah.
And sort of that's the way it felt off stage too, because that's just the way it worked. And Rachel and Brian were in town about a year ago, and Brian is the nicest guy. I'm sorry I didn't get to know him better when we were actually filming, because he's a really great guy.
In this current age of TMZ and social media and
the intrusion into the lives, if you like, or we now know, seem to know so much about what everybody does in Hollywood. Do you think you had it lucky that it was a bit of a better time before?
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, being gay in this business was not welcome at all, especially for a leading man, you know, a romantic leading man. And so I was very careful to try to walk that line of unknownness.
Did you have to keep it a secret?
Oh, absolutely.
And when did you feel you no longer did have to keep
when
it a secret?
When I was 68.
68. And was that a good feeling when you were finally able to
well,
be
open the goodness, the good, the great part of the, of what happened. I was writing a book, and about this subject in part, mostly about other things. But I remember a particular experience. I was writing in a little tiny room in Hawaii, and it was as if. There was not an angel there, but it was as if an angel came into the room and said, Richard, because to give a little background to that, when you grow up being a kind of person that is generally despised, you take that in and you begin to, on some level, to despise yourself. It just happens. And it was as if this angel came in and said, Richard, that's all over. Because it's just a being gay is just a benign fact, meaning almost nothing. Because you say you're straight, well, what does that tell you about a person? Does it tell you they're smart, dumb, good, kind, hardworking, lazy? That tells you almost nothing. Same with the word gay. It tells you almost nothing about a person. And I was suddenly bone deep, soul deep, freed of that self-dislike that had weighed so heavily through my life. And it was, that part was just amazing. And then I was suddenly on book tours,
yep.
On all the talk shows, the important ones, big ones.
Yeah.
And all they wanted to talk about was being gay in Hollywood. And I was fine with that. The fear was just gone.
Wow.
Which was an amazing experience.
That is incredible. Mm. And so quickly now, it seems quick when I say, of course it's not quick, it's taken years, but same-sex marriage now seems to be on a roll here in this country.
Yes.
Are you excited by that? Do you think
I didn't realize how excited I would be until I heard the Supreme Court decision and all that. And suddenly I just welled up in tears thinking, How wonderful, because love is love.
Did you think you'd see it in your lifetime? Did you think that marriage equality would be something you'd see in your lifetime? No. She's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Lindsay Lohan has been in the public eye since she was 3 years old, and there's very little of her life that we don't know about. I know that in my past I was young and irresponsible, she once said, but that's what growing up is. You learn from your mistakes. She was memorable as one of the judges on Australia's first season of The Masked Singer, and I caught up with her just as the juggernaut of a show was taking off.
Is this the craziest show you've ever worked on?
It's pretty nutso. Everything has been a whirlwind and so unexpected, but really fun. I've had a lot of fun.
How do you actually describe it?
It's like a very strange version of Coachella, Burning Man, which I've never even been to, but it's very trippy.
Let's talk about the judges, Jackie and Danny. Now, I'm calling you Charlie's Angels because we've got a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead.
I know Jackie for many years, and Danny's just fabulous. We have a lot of fun together, and we're always texting each other. Either we have, like, Bachelor girls' nights, and we watch The Bachelor, or we can hang out after and just dance, and even if it's here or back at wherever each of us are staying. But it's been really fun. They've been really helpful to me because I don't know many of the people that they're guessing, and I don't know a lot of Australian lingo. It's my first time here, so it's been really great to have two girls on my side.
How are you going with the Australian celebrities?
It's like going to school for learning Australia. and we're all like detectiving it. So it's really helpful. The voices are amazing. And staying in these costumes, it's just really hard for them to be in there for that long and to perform the way they perform is great.
So if they don't do such a great performance, tell me, did the three of you turn into Mean Girls? See what I did there?
No one turns into Mean Girls. I think the only Mean Girl that we've had is Husey. And he keeps guessing dead people.
Well, not
really strange. It's kind of his shtick at this point.
You're a singer. Can you imagine being dressed in a suit like that and having to do this yourself?
I don't know if I'd want to do it as much as they have to. But I do like dressing up. It makes me think of Elton John when he was performing in all of his costumes. And he was so comfortable with it and confident with it. Maybe it's easier because you don't have to actually show who you are. So you can kind of be whoever you are in that costume.
You did this amazing Insta post and you bunged on an Australian accent.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Neighbours, so...
Is that where you picked it up from?
I'm hanging for a meat pie. Get me one straight away.
That is really good. Would you ever be in Neighbours if they asked you?
Yeah, I would love to, because it's a show that I've watched for a long time, especially when I was in London. It was always on my TV.
But we could totes get you on set and
would I have to... An Australian accent, would I use, or would I use...
You could be whatever you like. You dream up the character. Who would you play?
Maybe I could come in and, like, be a therapist.
Therapist. I love it.
Because they always are talking about each other too much.
Sit on my couch. Tell me what you're thinking. I like it. How much have you loved being in Australia for the first time?
I love it. You know, my favorite is going to Bondi Beach. I'm working with a foundation called Ways of Wellness. And it's working with children who have gone through trauma and adults as well, PTSD and everything. And I'm really passionate about working with kids. And through sports and surfing and the ocean, where you have a safe place to actually speak and talk, it's really nice there. It's just very chill. I mean, people with no shoes on, getting out of the water. It was a very nice feeling. My little brother, he's not had always the best relationship with my father. And he always kind of strives for that. And he says, Lindsay, I have to tell you, when I go surfing and I'm out in the ocean, it clears my head and I can actually think. And so I think it's really important to share that and give a safe space for people to talk.
Use something that's so much around us here in Australia.
Especially during Shark Week.
You're wearing, I think, a great Australian designer today, Alex Perry.
Yeah.
Have you been loving the clothes, Sick, while you've been here? Have you been getting to wear some great stuff?
Yeah, it's been really fun actually playing dress up and doing fittings and everything. And it's hard to outshine the costumes. And it's fun when all the girls do a lot of sequins together and we kind of try and do the similar things with each other.
You're going to take anything home?
I'm going to have to buy 2 new suitcases to go home.
Good girl. Have you got any new music planned? Are we going to be hearing anything from you soon?
I do.
Oh, do tell.
I was actually writing last night. I've been in writing sessions as well as doing this and recording.
Recording here?
Yeah. I'm working with a girl called Alma.
Right.
And an Australian, Patrick James.
Patrick James. Have you filmed a clip here or anything?
Not yet. They're kind of making me wait, which is really frustrating. I'm also writing a TV series that will come out in America.
What's the TV show? Can you tell me anything about it?
Almost like a reality show, but not a reality show.
Like a hyper version of yourself sort of thing?
Yes.
Maybe?
And kind of the being a puppet master.
Wow. Are you in it?
Yeah, yeah. And my siblings.
And your siblings. Wow. That's exciting.
Yeah.
You've been busy. How do you cram it all in?
I like being busy. It's fun.
It is.
What else am I going to do? I mean...
Well, you're going to schedule the Neighbours role, which we'll have ready for you by Friday, I think. I can get that happening.
So you're my agent here now.
If that's okay. I've just got the contacts. We can make it fast. We can skip all the middlemen and make it happen nice and quickly. I think that sounds like a plan.
Finally today, here is one of my BFFs. William Shatner is one of the funniest people I know. He always has me in stitches. This next clip is from a catch-up we had at his place in LA, and I honestly don't know how I got through it. I was struggling to keep a straight face even before we started.
I understand that the Australian mindset lags. There's slow speakers, so I'll say something, and then you guys got to digest it. Takes about a second and a half for this slow Australian...
That is a bit harsh. I can't believe you're coming to Australia again. Do you have a second home there? You have been a lot.
In order to fit in, do I have to pause a second and a half before I answer? Wouldn't that be funny? You ask me a question and we leave a gap just so it's all equal. What was your question?
You're always coming to Australia. Have you got
I'm
a
always
secret,
coming
have
to
you got
Australia.
A secret house? Have you got a secret place down there?
I'm always coming to Australia because it's one of the great countries. I've been with you during these fires you know, in spirit. I was in Kangaroo Island last time I was there, and apparently it burned, right?
Very badly.
How did Kangaroo Island burn when it's separated by water?
That is just how devastating these bushfires have
been. Oh, my Lord.
And believe it or not, we're now facing floods.
I know, the rains.
It's just incredible.
It's terrible. My heart is goes out to you all there. I hope that the Australian spirit will manifest itself and rebuild immediately.
That's what we've got going for us. What do you love about Australian fans?
I love the kangaroos.
Do they come to the conventions
of course,
to see you?
You stay one jump ahead of you. what do I love about them? They're very funny.
Yes, we are.
The Australians laugh a lot, mm-hmm. Especially when I'm speaking.
Are you going to be doing any singing when you're down there? You've got a new blues album
coming out. I have a blues album coming out.
Would you do a gig at a nightclub or at a bar?
If the money were good, of course.
We could pass the hat around.
And not in Australian dollars.
Oh, you want real money.
Right. I need to rehearse and be really up on it. I have toured with an album that I've promoted here and there, but I'm not ready to sing right now.
Even a little bit now?
No, no.
Not
especially,
just for me?
Especially for me? Not now.
Oh, please, just a little bit.
Oh, no, don't do that feminine, please, Ben.
We got to do what we can.
The horrible secret that I only let out when I'm talking to Australia is that I can't sing. What I do is a musical, is a onomatopoeia, if you will. And I love the word, onomatopoeia of the English language, the rhythm, the sense, the melodic line of the English language.
Yeah.
That's what I do. And I try to mix that in with the melody line. And I've reinterpreted, in this blues album, I've just reinterpreted many of these blues songs.
See, I think that's brilliant. So you could come and do a song with our band, which is called, are you ready?
Yeah.
Hard and Fast from Behind. That's the name of the band.
That's one of my most embarrassing moments.
Do you love award shows? Are they
You mean to watch them?
No, to be in them.
No, I hate being in them. But the only exception I make is if I get an award.
Then it's good.
Then I love going to award shows. But if you're one of the five and somebody else has imagined, I'd rather be someplace else, you know, like in Australia.
That far away. do most fans talk to you about Star Trek, or do you find it's across the range of things?
Well, I've done other things Star Trek. I'm pretty much known as Shatner on the street.
Just Shatner on the street?
Yeah.
That's what people say?
No, Shatner when I'm on the street.
Okay, and they go, hey, Shatner.
On the street, right?
On the street. It's like a rap. What's the weirdest place anyone's asked for a selfie with you? The weirdest place someone's asked for a selfie with you?
The weirdest place?
Yeah.
In a toilet.
No.
Yeah.
What, at the urinal?
At a urinal.
Well, that's in the toilet.
No, well, I mean where business is really conducted.
Oh, right. And they asked you for a selfie in there.
Yeah, walked right in.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
What did you say?
What did I say?
Yeah, sure.
If you don't mind, can I stand up?
Never a dull moment with that man. I hope you've enjoyed listening to Starstruck as much as we've enjoyed putting it all together. We're taking a short break now, but we'll be back with more soon. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Ange Bishop, and this has been Starstruck, a Studio 10 podcast for 10 speakers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.